And my mom still asks me what I do, though. The internet stuff. That's what she tells everybody. He's in the internet. So, how are you guys doing this morning? That sounds pretty passionate. Cool. I've got one of those warm rooms. How are you guys doing today? There we go. Awesome. Because if we're going to talk about getting through a noisy world, we got to be noisy, right? So, I will let me tell you just really briefly about. I'm going to stand on this side of the room. Let me tell you a little bit about myself in respect to how I see where we're at with content, where we're at in the noisy world, and what I've been working on for the last few years. And in about 3 years ago, I was really working hard to look at how humans behave and how they work in this digital world. And then last year, I really focused in on the sharing aspect. And then this year, I'm really focusing in on the digital content and content in general and how that actually breaks through the clutter. So I'm going to walk through a tiny bit of each one of those, but I'm going to tell you a quick story that really kind of hones in on what I truly believe, and that's a personal story. Now, these are stories that actually happened to me. I don't make them happen. And the reason is because if you have ever seen the movie Meet the Parents with Gaylord Fokker, that's Fock, and I think Ben Stiller is the actor in that movie. Has ever Raise your hand if you've seen the movie. Wow. Okay, so you guys have all seen it. So you guys know that's a story about a true human, somebody that actually fucks up every day of his life and still comes out with a smile. He comes out every day thinking, wow, this is still cool. Now, here's the thing. About 17 years ago, I was in that movie, watching it with my then girlfriend, now wife, and we were sitting there, and she was busting up, just laughing and laughing and laughing, and I was not. And after the movie, walked out, and she said, how can you not laugh at that movie? It was hilarious. I said, because that is my life. I am Gaylord Fokker. And she said, okay, if we're going to get married, you have to learn to embrace your inner Fokker. And so from that day forward, I thought, how cool. I'm going to embrace my inner Fokker. I noticed that as I started to actually do that, it started to work in lots of ways, in business, in life, and so on and so forth. For instance, another side story, I was actually in my Honda Civic. This was 1 year later. Two-door Honda Civic, and I'm driving around downtown San Jose, and there's this little median, and I come out of the bank, the ATM, and I'm driving into the center lane, and I'm going around this big park median, and I go around the circle, and over on the left, on the other side, in the same lane that I'm in, on the other side, I see a car burst into flames. I'm like, oh my God. And then I see a car behind it burst into flames. I'm like, what are the chances of two cars bursting into flames? And I look ahead, and and there's this big cement median over my car with a big fence coming over the top of the car. And all these people, for as long as you can see, are behind the fence cheering me on, going, yeah. I'm like, and I look over at the cars and I realize I'm on a Formula One racetrack. And I'm in a Formula One race in a two-door Civic Honda. Now, here's the thing. The only way out was the way that I came in. So I worked my way around the track. You guys are starting to think, who is this guy and how is he giving us a presentation? No, really, there's a point to this. So I get out and I come around the front. I go back to my office. I'm sweating. I go into my office, close the door, and my wife comes in and she goes, what did you do now? And I'm like, I tell her the story, and she's like, okay, we got to learn to embrace our inner Fokker. This kind of stuff may happen to me all the time, but at the end of the day, in business, things happen, and people are humans, and accidents happen, or things are funny, or they're sad, or they're joyful, and there's different emotions, and all these different things happen within business that people really tend to resonate with. When you share these kinds of emotions, people get much closer. When you share more business-like, people get much farther away. Now, maybe I just pushed you all away with that story, but the idea is to, I'm kidding, The idea is to get and pull people in with your stories, with your, whether it's your personal story or brand story. And so breaking through that human firewall of all the people out there that are starting to look at your brand are really going to start resonating, I think, with personal brands or personal platforms or building a one-to-one or a human-to-human approach. Why? Because people, I think, identify with people more than they do right now with brands. I think that people are much more apt to trusting people more than they do brands. So if I actually come out and say, I'm going to buy a bicycle, and the brand tweets me back, or I go into a store and say, hey, I want to buy a bicycle, they're going to sell me their branded bicycle, that brand's bicycle. Now, if I talk to my friend Dave, he's going to tell me all the ups and downs of the things that he went through to buying his bike, because he's a bike enthusiast, and he's probably going to give me a much more honest story back with what everything that he went through and why he chose the bike he did. Now, I'm going to trust Dave more than I am the brand. It's just where things are at. It's the state of the state. So a couple years ago, I was on stage and I gave this presentation about human to human. There's no B2B or B2C, it's human to human. And the whole concept behind it is the trust that we have with other people. That when we're starting to automate things and we're starting to look through everything that we do together online, and we start to act like brands talking to brands, or the concept of different words that are too acronymy. I just made up a word. They're not real. You can't tell that there's a real human behind it. Things are starting to get automated via email, or they're getting automated via social media. And you just aren't connecting with that brand. Now, what if brands actually took the people inside of their organization, hence employee advocacy, or evangelists, or influencers, or influencer marketing, or any of these different things, and actually started to put their people up front, out first? Right? That's human to human. So human to human is really building the engagement between people and helping to garner that forward. So I gave this presentation again three years ago. This presentation, this slide actually showed up on stage, I think it was at Bloomberg West, and all of a sudden people raised their phones, they took pictures, much like all of you guys are doing, I'm kidding. And then they took pictures and it went out over the internet. This, like my mom says, on the internet. And then all of a sudden, before you knew it, people were sharing, and I started to measure it, and it got over 80 million impressions in 2 days. It was translated into over 15 languages at least that we could count, and then I did what all good marketers could do, and I wrote a book about it because I wanted to explain all the incoming questions about it that were coming in about what HH really meant. So now, moving forward, I really wanted to figure out, how can you scale this? How can you take, I mean, there's only so much of us to go around. Everyone in this room couldn't quite possibly build the human-to-human factors that it takes in some large companies or with all the data that's out there to be able to connect. So we'll get to that. But even more importantly, it's really important, and it is important to know that there's over 2.5 quintillion bytes of data created daily. So that's 15 zeros of information exchanged every day. So how do you hone in on the information? How do you make that information work when you're sometimes a team of 1, 2, 3, maybe just a handful of people? So the first thing that I highly suggest is to listen in on what it is that you want to take part in. Where's the conversation happening? And there's so many different tools out there, and I'm kind of a little bit of a tool whore. I can't believe I just said that out loud, but I kind of am a tool whore. I love tools. I sign up for every demo that comes by, and I really go through it and try to make it work and figure it out and see how I can make the math work. And so there's a lot of great tools for listening, and I highly recommend you use a tool for this, because using just a hashtag to look things up is probably not going to get you what you need if you're working in somewhat of a larger perspective of data or information. What you really need is the ability to see where your communities are happening, where the communities around what it is that your brand is doing are happening, right? And once those are happening, then you need to be flagged for when a certain question happens. Like, for instance, last year I tweeted back. Patty Cosgrove, he's actually having a conference right now in New Orleans about his web summit. He was back in Ireland and he was grabbing a cup of coffee, and I tweeted back and said, you know, oh man, I love European coffee. The U.S. coffee sucks in comparison to Europe. And if you've ever been to Europe and had coffee, it's, sorry, I think Europe's coffee is better. So anyway, I had this tweet that went out, and all of a sudden, I got a tweet back from this little mom and pop shop in Ireland. And it was like a little small family coffee shop, and they tweeted me back and said, "Well, we can't make an IV line into your arm to give you coffee all the time, but we can certainly send you some coffee," or something to that effect. And they ended up, like a week later, sending me this huge bag of coffee, European coffee, and I was like, that is so awesome. And so what I ended up writing about it, and I ended up talking about it and all this stuff, and so they got probably some pretty good play out of it. But at the end of the day, they were listening. So that's the point there, is that when you can spot these little moments, these little unexpected moments, and you can do something for someone that really jumps off the chart and makes them want to share that. And so one of the things that I like to focus in on brands is how to leverage brand influencers. And at our agency, we focus on brand influence or influence marketing. So we look at influencers and how they can actually take what it is that you're doing and amplify it, whether it's at an event or it's at a around a product launch or around something that's happening. And usually we like to walk them through a process of giving them a behind the scenes look of everything that's going on at your company, because most people who already are in love with your company will want to share anyway. So when you take the higher sharers, the people that are really, excited about what it is that you're doing, it'll jump off the roof because they are already have a following and they're already excited about it. So then you bring them in. We've done some things actually that I'll walk you through here too in a little bit. But one of the things that we've done is we've pulled people into an experience where they actually became futurists. Like for a day, we put them into a off-site loft in New York, and we had 30 people gathered, and they designed the future of commerce. And then we pulled them into an experience that night, an unexpected experience at the International Culinary Center, where they had fun. And fun is a huge part of this, which I also like to talk about too, where they started to get to know each other. So it was pulling these people together, getting them together to where they could get to know each other, and then moving them into a shared experience where the next day they actually went to the event. Now they ended up, over the course of a year, sharing over 1 billion tweets just out of that 30 people. So the amount of money that they would have put into, this was IBM, the amount of money that they would have put into advertising for 1 billion impressions versus, sorry, it was 1 billion impressions. 1 billion impressions versus 1 billion ads of impressions would have been 4 times more. Actually, back on this, one of the things that I really also believe is that while everybody can is an influencer on something, it's important to find out what they're really passionate about within a company and move them into that area so that they can start advocating for that. So building employee advocacy, I think I heard in the last talk, is one thing that can really change the course or the direction of your social media. And one thing that we also installed actually at IBM, where we took employee advocacy and influencer marketing and put the two together so that they can amplify together, and then we can actually tell where the conversions happen. So amplification to conversion is actually possible now, where you can take a tweet, send it out. If somebody clicks on it, converts over to a webinar, and then eventually even converts to a sale, we can see how much that tweet was worth, which is really cool. You haven't been able to do that until the last year, and actually one of the products that does that I'm fully aware of is Dynamic Signal. Is an employee advocacy tool that I highly recommend. But employee advocacy is enabled now to be able to measure from tweet click all the way down to conversion. So actually, sorry, before I get into that, let me do this, because I want to like really stress the idea behind an idea that can go off, an idea that can go viral on the web. So has anybody here ever been in the wave in a stadium? Yeah, raise your hand if you've been in the wave. Okay, so the people that haven't, can you raise your hand? Awesome. So, Miss, would you mind like starting the wave? Your whole job is to get that side of the room to stand up and sit down, get the whole room to do the wave, and then come back again. Okay? Ready, set, go. Awesome. Give yourselves a hand. So, if I can get your business card afterwards, I'd love to give you a copy of my books. And then thank you, because not only have you not been in a wave, but you actually can say you started a wave. So there's some thinking behind that. When you think about the wave is actually one of those things where everyone has to participate, or most people have to participate in order for it to assemble, for it to look good, right? But to get the wave to go off, waves aren't something that take off right away. I mean, I had to coach her to do that. She was kind of probably not too excited about doing it. Eventually it went off, and then we took some direction to make it happen. And then everyone, if you think about it, inside of the wave has to participate by doing this simple little gesture of standing up and sitting down and in order to make it go off. Now, think about the wave. In that respect, what makes it go off, sometimes once around, sometimes two times, sometimes five times at a stadium, of course, and sometimes 10 times. And usually it's around weather, playoff games, energy level, and one person who gets the wave started. It's always one person who gets it started. Like if you think about the ALS challenge, it was one person who actually got the ALS challenge started. A guy back east who actually had the ALS, actually started that movement. If you think about it, or I don't know if you knew this, the guy that started the wave, his name was Crazy George in 1983. And he started at the Oakland A's Coliseum, and it took him 3 years before he got the wave to actually go. So for him, he had to teach everybody in this big stadium to stand up and sit down at the exact same time and do this really weird thing around the stadium. Now, you guys know what the wave looks like, but back then it was like this really stupid thing that this guy was trying to do. And then once it took off after 3 years, here's the thing, 2 weeks later, it took place in another stadium across the country, and then another stadium, and the wave actually became a wave within stadiums. All within 1 year, every single stadium had done the wave. So, point being, is that building communities don't happen overnight, and it takes time to get all of this that you guys are doing done, but community is what it really takes to get content to go cut through the clutter and cut through the noise. So I wanted to prove that. So I had a chance, and I was really humbled to give an honor to give a talk at TED. And I stood on stage and tried to get my message through about how sharing can inspire and how it can change the world. How sharing on social media really changes the dynamic of what people buy based upon what people are saying and how much trust we have in the world. And so, This last part of my talk was about sharing inspires, hashtag sharing inspires, with this screen up. And I had everybody in the audience, for the very first time they allowed cell phones inside of the TED audience. They don't normally allow cell phones in there because they want people to pay attention. But we got approval from the CEO to use cell phones and try this test. And the test was to see if they could take a picture of this this screen and share it online and see how far and the reach is for the shares and what kinds of results we get back. And now we come back up on stage at the end of the day and report it. Now, I was praying that this would work, because here I had just convinced Ted to try this thing for the very first time, and thank God it worked. It got it trended on Twitter globally, and it had thousands of people actually tweeting and great responses. One of the responses of sharing inspires, how could they change the world? This guy responded back and said, if I hit the pizza button on the microwave, I want a pizza to come back without actually having to put anything inside of it. And then there was another person who actually had something a little bit more a little more, I wouldn't say warm, but a little more heartfelt, you know, about helping to solve sex trafficking in Africa. And then we had other people just sharing their ideas of how they can meet one new person a day. So the ideas were completely across the board, and they were happening globally. And so we wanted to take that and actually understand how influence worked in that situation, right? So what does that all mean? So we took the data behind everything that was inside of those shares, and we asked them to do it just on Twitter so that we can grab everything publicly, since Twitter is a much more public API. And then we took all of the data, and we used this program called Gelfi. It's free. It's not easy to use. I actually hired a guy from MIT to actually do the math on it. But you can take the data, and so we took the data and we put it all in here, and it was every single tweet that happened for that Sharing Inspires hashtag. And this is what happened. So each of these different clusters right here is a different geography. It's a different country around the world. And each of the head clusters, the head of the clusters, these little nodes, those are the small groups of people that actually push the message out to each country. Those are the people that started the message or took the message and then re-amplified it back out to the country, and it took off based upon their tweets, which means that they're more of an influencer than anyone else on that topic. And so then we took that message that we did, and 2 weeks later we re-amplified it, but we reached out to just these people in each country and asked them to amplify it, and we got almost nearly the same results as I did from the TED stage. So what that means is that influence really, really does matter. We can take, if you have and build your influence community and you have the same message, or within the genre of what it is that you want to share, and you want to see that go cut through the clutter, you can share it with the same group of people and have it go just as crazy as standing on a TED stage, which is pretty cool. So this is the IBM project that I was talking to you about. Actually, it was over 3 billion social impressions that were created simply by bringing in those kinds of influencers that already had passion and influence over this topic. So if you, again, use social listening, back to listening, pull people in and then ask them to take part in an experience where they can learn about your product or service, and then you can pull them into a experience where then they feel like they want to share, that share can go way farther than a branded tweet from IBM, right? Makes sense. So their stats were crazy. So over a year, they got over 3 billion impressions, over 500 IBM registrations to events, over 2,000 downloads direct from these tweets. We trended globally. We had over 500 pieces of original content that was created, and the content came from the influencers, not from the brand. Because here's the thing, when we're creating content, which is always every brand's challenge, when a brand creates content, it's the brand pushing the content. It's the brand trying to get a landing page up, pushing content, getting signups, and getting people to buy in on their thoughts and their ideas and their ebooks and everything that they're putting out there. But when you have influencers that are actually creating the content for you, and they're proud of their work that they've written and done, and then you help them to launch that content, the content becomes more amplified because it's not IBM's work, it's the influencer's work. It's outside of IBM or outside of your brand or outside of brand X. So that content becomes much more potentially viral than that. So consistently, this program returned a 3x ROI based upon what we would have spent had we bought ads and run through this process of gaining impressions. Now, how do you identify influencers? How do you identify the people that can really help you? There's six different types of people, six different types of advocates, and you really want to understand how they work and what do they talk about and what do they say. And part of it is math, part of it is using an actual program, a listening program. Part of it is actually identifying what kind of sharer they are. Sorry. Okay, you got it? And part of it's understanding what kind of sharer they are, right? So this is research that the New York Times did, and New York Times customer Insight group in 2 years ago, this study's from 2 years ago, they broke down the different types of influencers, advocates, and sharers. So I'll quickly run through them. The first one's an altruist. An altruist is somebody that specifically shares one thing all the time. They're very specific about what they share. They're very passionate about that one thing. Number two is a careerist. A careerist is somebody who wants to see their own career succeed. They're also interested in helping other people's careers around them, so it's not just themselves. The interesting thing about a careerist is that they tend to be thought leaders. They tend to write a lot of blogs, they write a lot of papers, ebooks, things like that, books. Hipsters, I actually prefer to call them early adopters because hipster actually, I think, connotates a certain idea in our mind of what they might look like. But an early adopter is somebody who, like myself, might buy an Apple Watch at 12:06 a.m. and then turn around and wonder why they did that. I still don't know why I did it. But anyway, early adopters are the kind of people that actually love to go out there and try new things, test new things, and then turn around and teach it to somebody else. So that's why I prefer to think of this as an early adopter versus a hipster, and I've been writing about it that way. Number four is probably the most interesting one because it has a dual meaning. It's called a boomerang. And a boomerang is somebody who will ask questions to receive a response. So a boomerang can be a community manager, a social media community manager. Because they're really good at asking a question of the community, receiving a response, and then responding back. It's a really cool thing when you have a boomerang as a social media community manager. Now, it can also be a troll. A troll is somebody that likes to ask a question so they receive a response, so they can come back at you in a much more negative or challenging way. So that's the boomerang. Number five is connector. A connector is somebody that likes to connect two or more people. LinkedIn is a great use for this online. And number six is a selective. A selective is actually somebody that would rather selectively communicate with somebody behind the scenes. So most people tend to be a selective on some level because they'd rather email, direct message, private message, or share in some way. And here's the thing. I actually think the selectives are the target audience for who we should all be looking at. Here's why. The selectives are more trusted. That's not to say everyone else isn't trusted, and I don't think that I'm saying this out of turn, but I think that selectives actually, their message goes farther because they never or hardly ever or rarely share. So if you get somebody who actually shares your brand message and they don't share a lot, guess who you're gonna trust? It was tested. I talked to the CMO of McDonald's. He ran a campaign specifically around this. So most brand pages have people that like, or even your friends, like, you know who those people are, they just like everything. That's probably an early adopter. It could be one of the others. The other side of it is a selective. The selective liked the page, but never liked anything since then. Why? Because they're not as public, and they don't enjoy being public in that way. But here's the thing. McDonald's ran this campaign, they ran the campaign around a coupon to the early adopters and to educate the selectives on health. Funny that I'm talking about McDonald's and health in the same sentence, I know, but it works for the case study. So he sent out this coupon. The coupon went out to all the early adopters and they got like, but the coupons that the sales or the downloads that they had for the coupons were not as high as the selectives. Why? Because the selectives really, when they did go to share, their friends downloaded more of the coupons than the early adopters did, and he had a much higher download rate of the health information that they were putting out there. The last part of this here is. Is when you sign people up to be an influencer, when you get people on board as an influencer, you ask them to share certain things. I really, truly believe that everyone needs to be treated like a VIP. What I mean by that is that it's not just an online conversation, that you take it offline, that you actually have a conversation with them, that you treat them well, that you send them something maybe in the actual mail, imagine that. That you actually give them certain things behind the scenes, things that they wouldn't get, like if there's a band at your event, take them behind the scenes and introduce them to the band, or if there's something at your introduce them to your CEO, or do those kinds of things that really reward them as a VIP. And I had this actually in my book, but I'm a big believer of giving before you ask. So as you ask every influencer to be in your influencer program or breaking into understanding what their needs are, before you ask them to share, give long before you ask them to do anything. So many times people come right out of the gates and they say, hey, can you share this for us? Can you write this for us? Can you do this for us? How many times do you do that? Because that's what the ROI is. The ROI is immediate for an influencer to be able to go out and do something so that you can share what they did. But if you, I promise you this, people are, and humans all think the same way. If you give to them long before you ask them to do something like that, they're gonna be so much happier to share your stuff, and it's gonna go way farther because the energy into it is gonna go farther. I already talked about work hard, play hard with the internet, International Culinary Center. The next tip is really around growing the conversation. So how many people here have a community within their brand? Like any kind of customer community or, I'm surprised, any kind of, in any kind of community that you're building besides just social community, but an actual like private community? So there's like two? Guys, what are you doing? No, I'm kidding. So this is really important. This is so vital to what you guys are doing, and it's so easy to do too. So I would recommend, if you don't have your own private community, I would highly recommend setting one up. You can do it either for your influencers, which we've done, so that they can meet each other and talk to each other, or you could just do it for your general community, whether it's customer community, it's your internal employee base. There's all kinds of communities that exist around you. Whichever type makes the most sense for you is the one that I would definitely start. But you could do it as easily as setting up a private group on Facebook. I have one for our own company. We actually have one where we just, if you're an employee of Pure Matter, then we talk here and we share ideas here and do that kind of thing. I have another one called H2H Group, and we've got, I think, almost 400 or 500 people in there that are talking about these kinds of ideas on influence and marketing and that kind of thing. You can set these things up, and it helps to create that conversation not just between you and your customer, you and your influencer, but between the influencers themselves. That's what you really want, because when they're talking to each other and sharing ideas, that's where the best content comes from. I also think that going back to the whole human-to-human philosophy, it's really important to teach your advocates, your employees, your people to share in a human way. So if anybody emails me off of my email database or off of Pure Matter's email database, and they email me with a question, everybody gets a video reply. And I don't mean just like a canned video reply. I actually, every Saturday, I walk for an hour and a half, and I actually just hold my phone up and I answer their question on video. And it's about a minute long, and I just reply back in video. And you can use a program called, it's the funniest name in the world, it's called BombBomb. And it's a great thing. You can also just open up the YouTube app, and it has a video record on it. But anyway, either way, and that's free and easy to use, either way, I think this kind of thing is really important. Here's why. Every time I send a video back, or every time I've coached a client to actually do these kinds of things where it's like really personalized response, the person who receives it has clicked on every single campaign from that point forward and has eventually converted on something. So the success rate of these one-to-one communication pieces are off the charts. Anybody there, who here has a CRM database? Raise your hand. Okay, so if you don't have a CRM database, again, highly recommend one. And if you are looking for a great CRM database, I highly recommend, you can look at things like Salesforce. I recommend a company called Nimble, because it actually travels with you everywhere that you go on the internet. You can actually highlight somebody's name, and it will pull in all of their social data automatically, and then be able to connect all the conversations that you may have had in the past, along with everybody that exists in your organization. You can see everything across the board easily, just simply by highlighting their name. It's really cool. So the reason that I bring that up is because that way I can see when somebody has sent a video, a personalized video, and I don't do the same thing the next day. And so we can organize our advocates, our influencers, our employees, everybody under one umbrella, and be able to see when all these personalized H-to-H communication pieces are happening so that we don't overlap. And it's really important to do that. Okay, so just closing out here is how to get other people to take part. So content, where we started, is highly, highly important to get people to click through, right? So one of the things that we try to do is to get other people to take part in actually building the content. So here's one idea. It's funny that it ended up at, this is a Gaylord Fokker moment, it ended up at 69 experts. So I ended up inviting all of these great people, these social influencers, in to actually talk about their ideas for the future of what social media looked like. This was back in November. To look like, what did it look like in 2016? And so they each gave me a paragraph in their headshot, and then we organized it into one single blog post and then pushed it out and ended up getting shared almost 20,000 times. So I sent one email out to everyone saying it's up, and from that point forward, it got shared almost 20,000 times. Point again being is that influence helps when you have people also invested in the content that they're helping to create, and they're helping to also be identified and highlighted and featured in something that's making them look good too. So it's a win-win. All right, so, sorry, I said that was the last one. I keep having more things that I wanna share with you here, and this is actually a great little tool as well. This is called the ShareLink Generator, sharelinkgenerator.cc. If you put in your messages into each one of these different areas right here, you can pre-write, or you can write in your title and your summary and fill in all the information into each one of these, and it automatically generates a share link for each one of the social networks. It's already filled out, meaning all they have to do is click on the link and then click share, and we'll automatically share the message and the image for each one of those networks. So most of the time when you email your advocates, influencers, employees, or anyone to share your information, and you say, hey, will you go tweet this? Here's the link to the blog. You're not gonna get a lot of shares. The reason is because they're gonna put it aside and say, I'll do it later. I don't have time for that. Oh, I have to write the tweet and actually push it out. Those kinds of things take time. So when you shortcut that time and you just give them the actual link, all you have to do is just click share. I've done all the hard work for you. This helps you do that. And there's a lot of other tools out there too, but I just wanted to give you at least one to use. Okay, so that brand type, the six brand types that I told you about, you can actually go figure out which brand type you are in less than 2 minutes. This is a quick assessment, and there's no fields there. It's all just multiple choice, and it'll walk you through, I think, in four questions, and tell you which brand type you are. And I've had over almost 5,000 people take this, and 3 people tell me that I was wrong. So I feel like I'm winning on the accuracy rate. Two ways that you can figure out which brand type you are. One, just go to briankramer.com/SM Summit, and then you can fill it out. Or if you have your cell phone, I sound like an infomercial. Or if you have your cell phone today, you can text 33444 and use SM Summit in the message, and it will just give you the link right there. So hopefully that's helpful too, because then if you can start to see how you're categorized as a personal brand, as a sharer or an influencer, then you can start to see how that might apply to your employees of your brand or your influencer marketing that you may do. And that's it. We can connect. I'd love to connect on at Brian Kramer on all social medias. And if you guys have any questions about anything that I talked about here today, I'd love to take them. So thank you guys so much.
We've officially got 3 minutes, but if Brian's cool with it, I'll give you 4 or 5. So who's got questions? Brian's got answers.
You mentioned before you start working with your influencers to give before you ask.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you have examples of that, and also maybe for someone. I work with alumni, so it's not like their product is, they already went to the university, so we don't really have a product to give them in advance.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, who do you work for?
I work for MIT.
Oh, got it. Yeah. give before you ask is, you know, well, like if you got, if you have events, events are the best way to not only include, bring people into your business or your organization, but it's a great way to actually meet them right face to face, because once you make that connection, then online it just grows exponentially. So I believe in more offline events first, if you can. You can't always do that. And so if you have or put together an event, especially tailed off another event, and not ask them to do anything. Like, we just want you to show up. We'll do everything else. Like, we're not expecting you to share anything. We're not expecting you to do it. We'll provide you lunch. We'll give you, you know, insights into this. We're going to take you on a tour. We're going to, you know, offer you, you know, a $10 credit at the bookstore. Here's a free hat. Like just a day of an experience and not ask for anything. That's what I'm talking about.
So are you saying, but are you like planting the idea first before you ask? So you're planting the idea, inviting them.
We are inviting you personally to be a part of our influencer program. We've handpicked you based upon the following things that you always share. However, we are asking you to come to this event. We're not asking you to do anything other than get to know us. Okay. And then that's just giving them something. Now, out of that, I would take things like an understanding, like a quick assessment of what it is that they're looking to be passionate about. Like, what do you like to share? How do you like to share? Where do you like to share? Like, start to understand them throughout the day so that then you can come back to them after the event and say, hey, we have some opportunities here if you'd like to take part.
Got time for one more if somebody's got it.
I loved your example of replying with a video to kind of make it more personal. I think you have the advantage of your brand is your person. I work for Tazo Tea, and I'm wondering if you have any tips for bringing a brand to life as far as not actually making it be a person, but kind of giving it that same personalized feel.
What kind of brand is that?
Tazo Tea, which some of you guys are drinking,
yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I love Tazo Tea.
You know, I mean, think about like Honda. They are a people brand because they've got people on the ground actually selling the cars, but they are also a much bigger brand. So it's a very retail brand, but it also a much bigger global brand as well. And so they took actually Vine videos and made short, quick responses to people's questions in Vine. And so somebody would say, I can't find the cigarette lighter. I'm making that up. But they can't find the cigarette lighter. They would actually Vine where the cigarette lighter was in the car and then send that person back a tweeted Vine of where that cigarette lighter was. And it made that real connection. That person just never expected it. So it doesn't have to be just a personalized video from a person, but using video in some way to actually respond not just to them, but globally is helpful. And the reason is because they started to build this Vine library of all these Q&As. And so everyone got to see where the lighter was. So it was very helpful globally or publicly. Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. I don't think it just has to be a one-off or one-to-one.
Cool. Everybody, please give a warm round of applause for Brian Kramer.